Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
So deep inside, ladies and gentlemen, it's going to take pliers to get to remove this, or the management of WNYC New York. Ladies and gentlemen, good news. The Chinese have not stopped at pet food or at seafood in their determination to contaminate all the food products they export to the United States. It's a war. Deadline Sacramento, the California Department of Public Health is warning American consumers not to eat ginger imported from China. Isn't that where it's from? Man. Because it might contain a dangerous pesticide. The ginger was distributed to Albertsons and Save Mart stores by Christopher Ranch of Gilroy, California, where they used to actually grow stuff. Now they just bring it in from China. That's called good progress. Monitors with the State Department of Pesticide Regulation detected the presence of aldecarb sulfoxide, which is not approved for use on ginger in California. Well, why the hell not? It's good enough for the Chinese. The department has said it has received no reports of illness from customers who ate the contaminated ginger. But they all died. No, before they could reach the phone? I don't think so. Aldecarb. Just, it's fun to say it, probably not fun to eat it. Ladies and gentlemen, news of our, you know, before I go any further, because I'll go further and then I'll forget. It's a busy week for the host of this broadcast this Wednesday night. Those of you in the Southern California area. A very rare appearance by yours truly at the House of Blues on the Sunset Strip. Yeah, come on up to the Sunset Strip. And then the next night, Thursday night, at Book Soup, also on the Sunset Strip. So I'll just be basically letting my freak flag fly on the strip. All in celebration of a new record that drops on Tuesday, and you'll be hearing some of it today. Enough about me. Deadline Washington. What about Pakistan? Enough about me. What about Pakistan? Deadline Washington. Owais Ahmad Ghani, the governor of Baluchistan, that's what I said in Washington this week that it is the CIA and not Pakistan that should be asked, where's Osama bin Laden? So at least one of the Pakistani officials is getting up on his hind legs. His rationale, it was the CIA that recruited, trained, and shepherded the future chief of Al-Qaeda during the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan and the ensuing conflict. What a bounder to bring that up. That's history. Pakistan, he said in answer to a question at a speaking engagement arranged by a local think tank in Washington, had never had anything to do with bin Laden. In fact, he said, bin Laden always hated Pakistan. He described the province of Baluchistan as peaceful and secure, barring the tiny Bukti area where there is, quote, some resistance. Well, they're putting up resistance. Baluchistan is, of course, one of the areas of the tribal part of Pakistan, along with Waziristan, where rumors have been rife that Osama bin Laden has been hiding out, has been having a haven, to use the CIA's word. Quote, ours is a society in transition, and we have a rising middle class. We face stiff political challenges, and there is class tension, he explained. Class tension. There were three kinds of terrorism, he said. What? I thought there was only one, the bad kind. Ethnic, sectarian, and the pure kind. Global terrorism should be differentiated from the local variety, he suggested. He also proposed renaming the global war on terrorism to the war on global terrorism. So that would be, instead of the global war on terrorism, the war on global terrorism. Can we get the t-shirts remade in time? With the exception of three tribal chiefs, he claims, the rest are now part of the political mainstream. In his area, he said, the source of weapons that the dissident elements have in the province come from Afghanistan. Only 1% of his population is involved in the insurgency. So ask the CIA where Osama bin Laden is. That's the word from the tribal area. From the tribal area of Santa Monica, hello, welcome to the show. From the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. How's that ginger holding up? Ladies and gentlemen, it's time now for news from outside the bubble. More about China from Rupert Murdoch's Times of London. Hey, congratulations, Rupert, on getting the Wall Street Journal. We know they're going to have fun. From the Times of London, Tibet's living Buddhas have been banned from reincarnation without permission from China's atheist leaders. The ban is included in new rules intended to assert Beijing's authority over Tibet's restive and deeply Buddhist people. Quote, the so-called reincarnated living Buddha without government approval is illegal and invalid, according to the order, which comes into effect September 1st. So if you want to reincarnate, you've only got about 24 days. The 14-part regulation issued by the State Administration for Religious Affairs, always a good idea, is aimed at limiting the influence of Tibet's exiled god king, the Dalai Lama, and at preventing the reincarnation of the 72-year-old monk without approval from Beijing. For the first time, China has given the government the power to ensure that no new living Buddha can be identified, sounding a possible death knell to a mystical system that dates back as far as the 12th century. By the way, the boy chosen by the Dalai Lama to be the true reincarnation has disappeared. These things happen, they're mysteries. The abbot who worked with the Dalai Lama was jailed and has since vanished. Several sets of rules on seeking out soul boys were promulgated. That's all I want in life is a soul boy. Were promulgated in 1995, but were effectively in abeyance, and hundreds of living Buddhas are now believed to have to live inside and outside China. All Tibetans believe in reincarnation, but only the holiest or most outstanding individuals are believed to be recognizable in apparent body. One Tibetan monk told the Times, in the past, there was no such regulation. The management of living Buddhas is becoming more strict. And also from the Times of London, still owned by Rupert Murdoch, about 90% of the violence in the southern part of Iraq, where the British troops are the coalition representatives, is directed against British forces, while the rest is a mixture of mafia-style gangsterism and, quote, ordinary decent crime, unquote. I love that. That's so British. British officials believe that once British troops are withdrawn from the equation, rival Shiite militias, tribes, and political parties will settle down together after a brief power struggle. Commanders reject the fears of some local people that their city will descend, the city of Basra, will descend into anarchy without a British presence. So, maybe the same is true. No, maybe not. Who knows? Foretelling the future in Iraq has been a real good scam for a long time now. It's almost as successful as predicting which TV series become hits. And from New Scientist, also behind the bubble, the children of United States soldiers deployed in war zones are suffering higher rates of maltreatment, according to a 3-year study of U.S. families reported in New Scientist magazine. The rate of overall child maltreatment by the civilian partners of soldiers increases by 40% when their husbands serve in combat zones. Cases of specific neglect rise almost threefold, report the researchers. The team believes that an inability to cope with the stressful situation might lead to such maltreatment, and say their findings highlight the need for better support services to reduce the strain on non-deployed spouses. The findings of the new study will undoubtedly disconcert both supporters and critics of the current combat commitment. The current length of deployment for active Army units lasts 15 months. Information was collected on almost 3,000 children from 1,800 military families between 2001 and 2004. During soldier deployments to combat zones, the rate of maltreatment of the kids rises 42%. Overall, it's good to be a kid of a combat soldier. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. Isn't it a copyrighted feature of this broadcast? It is. And before we go any further, crews have discovered highly radioactive waste leaking at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation last week, only after workers in protective gear were checking a clogged pump and noticed the ground was soaked with spilled nuclear sludge. Clean, safe, plentiful. Critics labeled Friday's spill further evidence of a bumbling cleanup at the contaminated site in central Washington, saying that safety equipment should have immediately detected the leak. I don't live in that world of should, do you? Quote, you've got some of the most dangerous material ever created by humans in those tanks, says a spokesman for the Hanford Watchdog Group. The U.S. Department of Energy, which runs the reservation and oversees the cleanup by private contractors, could not say how long radioactive material leaked or how much had escaped and seeped into the ground. Aside from that, they're on top of it. And these are the same people who will be running the nuclear waste repository at Yucca Mountain in Nevada, where our clean, safe, plentiful nuclear waste will be dumped for storage for, you know, just 100,000 years. 10,000? Okay, you got me. The cost of building a government railroad across rural Nevada to carry nuclear waste to Yucca Mountain has grown beyond $3 billion. It's cheap, it's safe, it's clean, and is climbing with groundbreaking still several miles away. Still several years away, according to new estimates. The Department of Energy has set $3.155 billion, the latest price tag, to run rail 315 miles from eastern Nevada to the Yucca site. That's up from $2 billion, estimated about a year and a half ago. The numbers underscore the growing cost of the proposed Nevada nuclear waste complex and the likely challenges facing the Energy Department to secure funding from Congress. Well, we could just not repair bridges. Quote, I think this is going to be a big pill to swallow on Capitol Hill, says the executive director of the Nevada Agency for Nuclear Project. This goes to show the longer things get delayed, the more expensive it will be for the rising costs of concrete and steel. But also, this is a more difficult job than they thought before. The cost of constructing the repository and transportation has been estimated as recently as March at $27 billion. Clean, safe, cheap, plentiful. The department has not updated broader and longer-range life cycle costs, which were at $57 billion in 2001. And the government, of course, is still several years away from breaking ground for the railroad and the waste-handling buildings at Yucca Mountain. So dig in, and please give.
Young man goes a-courtin' with just one thing in mind. It's hey, nonny, no, nonny, ninny, yo. A good time for to find. A young girl goes a-flirtin' with just one tale to tell. It's hey, nonny, no, nonny, ninny, yo. A man to wed her well. Consider the corn, consider the wine. One has a day when it's in its prime. The other takes years to be sturdy and fine. If only the two could just combine. Corn wine, corn wine. A husband starts a-workin' at the rosy crack of dawn. Then it's hey, nonny, no, nonny, ninny, yo. He comes home and mows the lawn. A mother gives her children things she never had. Then it's hey, nonny, no, nonny, ninny, yo. Then ole Mrs. Dad. Consider the corn, consider the wine. One's in a hurry, the other takes time. One's on a stalk, the other's on a vine. If only the two could intertwine. Corn wine, corn wine. An old man sits a-wondering about the game his life has played. It's hey, nonny, no, nonny, ninny, yo. He needs both nurse and maid. An old woman sits attending to the one she's loved so long. It's hey, nonny, no, nonny, ninny, yo. And an ending for this song. Consider the corn, consider the wine. One has a day when it's in its prime. The other takes years to be sturdy and fine. If only the two could just combine. Corn wine, corn wine, corn wine.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week. I'll apologize for just playing my own record this week. How's that? Deadline Newark, New Jersey. Newark Mayor Cory Booker has been apologizing a lot this week. First about slow payments to teens working in a summer employment program, and later in the week about comments of him describing a community activist posted on YouTube. Booker on Wednesday apologized to a group of teens working in various jobs across Newark who didn't receive their paychecks on Monday. Teens will be paid about 4 days late. But the bigger gaffe came over comments Booker made at a political fundraiser in May, captured in a clip posted on YouTube. In it, Booker described a late former president of the Newark Parents Association as a, quote, portly woman with missing teeth who he said cussed a lot. The former president of the PTA died in December of a heart attack. Booker apologized for the remark, and the video has since been removed. Under no circumstances would I intend to disparage Judy Diggs, he said in a statement. She was one of the many Newarkers that struggled with me over the issues that are important to our people and our neighborhoods. So that answers one question. They're called Newarkers. Toymaker Mattel has apologized to customers affected by a recall of almost a million toys from its Fisher-Price division. The plastic preschool toys, Sesame Street figures, Dora and Diego, were made in China with paint found to have excessive amounts of lead.
Sorry.
Quote, "We apologize to everyone affected," says Robert Eckert, CEO of the world's largest toy maker. At least the toys weren't made with ginger. Dateline Pittsburgh. A newspaper reporter who said Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Vick would have been, quote, better off raping a woman than being charged with dogfighting, has apologized. Paul Zeiss also will not appear on the sports TV talk show where he made the remark. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reporter made the comments on the Sports Showdown show on KDKA-TV. He was disagreeing with another panelist who said the NFL commissioner should suspend Vic for the rest of the season. Vic is charged with running a particularly brutal dogfighting operation. Zeiss said, quote, "It's really a sad day in this country when somehow Michael Vick would have been better off raping a woman if you look at the outcry of what happened. Had he done that, he probably would have been suspended for 4 games and he'd be back on the field," unquote. Zeiss says he regrets the choice of analogies. The station also apologized on the newscast and says Zeiss will not be invited back. The Post-Gazette called its reporters' comments insensitive and offensive and said they don't reflect the newspaper's views. Do newspapers still have views? I thought they cut back on those. A celebration party thrown by the ruler of Dubai for the Iraqi soccer team after its Asian Cup win was marred when the national anthem from the era when Saddam Hussein ruled the country was played, angering many players and prompting some to walk away. Officials of the Emirates apologized for what was apparently a mistake. Najah Hamoud from the Iraqi Soccer Federation said a technician responsible for the music was unaware there was a new anthem. Word gets out slowly in Iraq, do you think? The new anthem is Maotini. Fire up a Maotini and a folk tune popular throughout the Arab world to replace the old anthem which glorified Saddam's bath party. The Iraqi soccer team trains in Dubai because of violence in Iraq. What? I thought there was good progress. The British Post Office has apologized unequivocally for sending letters to hundreds of sub-postmasters warning them that they face losing pay if they stray from the official line on closing post offices. Post offices closing post offices. The letter, which was sent to postmasters and leaked to the opposition Conservative Party, states that staff who failed to toe the official line about the closures could lose packages worth up to $120,000. Anonymous post office representatives would be traveling to branches around the country to check that their key messages were being filtered through to customers, the letter said. The letter from the head of the closure program was sent last month and included a document intended to deal with questions frequently asked by customers. It offers suggestions of approved responses about why post offices are closing, for instance, falling customer numbers, a change in customer behavior with more people using the internet. The letter also said representatives of Post Office Limited will visit branches at random on an anonymous basis to ensure these key messages are being delivered in an accurate and professional manner. Post Office spokesman has now apologized and said the letter had been wrongly sent out and contained factual inaccuracies. "We would like to make it clear we will not be doing anonymous testing. That's not going to happen. It was never going to happen," said the Post Office spokesman. But it's really not going to happen now. Even more. Nearly a month after police brutality accusations, Memphis Police Director Larry Godwin apologized to the victims. Godwin and his command staff met with family and faith-based leaders at the Missionary Baptist Church in South Memphis. Dateline Minneapolis, a Burnsville, Minnesota man who made $24 million selling prescription painkillers through his internet pharmacy was sentenced to 30 years in federal prison. 27-year-old Christopher Smith was convicted on 9 counts, including conspiracy to sell drugs illegally, misbranding drugs, and money laundering. Smith apologized, saying he was selfish and thought only about himself. He says now his son will have to go without a dad. So he's thinking now about himself and his son. and himself. But his son, really. And himself. Deadline Tokyo, a Japanese food distributor, has apologized on his company's website for knowingly using expired tuna in consumer products. That's legacy tuna, isn't it? Akihiko Tsutsui said he knew in January of this year that his Maruha company was distributing tuna that expired last July. It did not halt tuna shipments or inform customers that their food might be tainted, and the products were sold at sushi restaurants and grocery stores until March. Just another reason that the host of this broadcast does not eat sushi. Too much trust. In June, the company notified government authorities, and there was a voluntary recall issued, but of course most of the food had been consumed by then. Quote, "As president, I deeply regret it took us so long to deal with this problem," Tsutsui said in a statement on his company's website. Newspapers did not say if any consumers became ill from eating the old tuna. Well, if not, notify medical authorities, because they've been having it wrong all this time. A House committee queried former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld this week and three top generals about the mishandling of information about the friendly fire killing of former NFL star Pat Tillman. Rumsfeld apologized to the Tillman family, but he claimed he did not learn about the fratricide for nearly a month after the investigation began and after dozens of others at the Pentagon had learned about it. He said that in such a large institution, quote, you can't be aware of everything, like the friendly fire death of a former NFL star. That stuff slips through the cracks. Of course, there are big cracks. One congressman quoted Tillman's mother, previously expressing the view that given her son's fame, that this was virtually impossible. Rumsfeld calls those the words of a grieving mother who admitted she had no facts. Asked if there was a cover-up, Rumsfeld said there were indeed no facts to suggest that, no evidence. I know that I would not engage in a cover-up and that no one in the White House would suggest such a thing. Later, he added, human beings make mistakes. He claimed he was not upset that he had not been notified more quickly about the suspicions of fratricide. Hey, stuff happens. He also said regarding the process by which he became informed, ultimately, late, that Pat Tillman had not been killed by enemy fire, as the Pentagon first said, but by friendly fire. He said he didn't recall details of the process about 129 times. Dick Cheney this week said he didn't recall some other things. So a big Lachaux shipment of ginkgo biloba to Rumsfeld and Cheney to help, because they're going to need it. The call letters K-blank-N-T have landed at a yet unbuilt low-power digital television station in Maui. Alarmingly similar to a word the dictionary says is obscene, the call letters were among a 15-page list of new call letters issued by the FCC. The same station owner also received permission to use KWTF for a station in Arizona. Kevin Bay, vice president of KM Communications, who requested and received K-blank-NT and KWTF, apologized to anyone that was offended. It is extremely embarrassing for me, he says, and my company, and we will change those call letters immediately. He promised to make sure, quote, I don't fall asleep on the job when selecting call signs again. The company has 80 sets of call letters and alphanumeric call signs for radio and TV stations in several states. One more reason why you shouldn't own that many. And Northwest Airlines CEO Doug Steenland apologized this week to thousands of passengers inconvenienced this summer by widespread flight cancellations. Cancellations he blamed mostly on increased pilot absenteeism. Although the New York Times blames growing customer dissatisfaction this summer on the increasing load factor, that is to say, most airplanes fly with most seats filled, so if flights are delayed, it's harder to get a new flight. Not coincidentally, the airlines are reporting actual profits this year. The apologies of just another reason not to fly. Stay home. Enjoy. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
farewell to Frank Clinton that Bush chose to ignore. A lessening of emphasis when the experts called for more. Some strange young guys in flight school who couldn't learn to land. And tragedy at 400 knots. Next time, we'll connect the dots. Life gives you clues that you can use. Sometimes makes the news seem so clear in the land of afterthoughts. We've got to connect the dots. Dick Cheney was the chairman of a firm known far and wide for doing well, rebuilding what the army just destroyed. Got his deals the easy way, no bidding to withstand. Them that has might just be them that got. Next time, we'll connect the dots. Life gives you crumbs, you take what comes. Some just might be plums. Are these only neat ideas, or are they plots? One day. Saddam's weapons with the finest fine tooth comb. Assam is still in business with the inspectors of war gone home. Can't really be a quagmire if it's just made out of sand. Things are going great. Ignore the shots. Go buy some stuff. Don't worry about the dots.
Connect the dots. Connect the dots.
Life gives you clues that you can use. Sometimes makes the news. Some of us in lifeboats, some in yachts. One day soon.
This is Le Show, and you know, it's really the critics who focus on Katie Couric's appearance that are being so unfair, basically because she's a woman. She's a journalist, and she doesn't focus on superficial things like that. As this found object from Katie Couric at the Minnesota bridge collapse should prove, from the found objects department.
Oh, it's a monitor. I kept seeing, like, lines on my shirt. But I think it's the monitor, right, you guys?
Yeah.
Okay, good. That's it.
Oh.
Yeah. Wait a second. I'll do it. It's so big. Do we need this big a mic, you guys? Yeah, we do. The mic is so gigundo, you know? We have to have this big a mic, you guys?
I have to have the double click.
Okay. Should we look better higher? Okay. Let's go, Eric.
You want to do the headline?
Yeah, and also, Eric, after that, I need to do the headline. I'm Katie Couric in Minneapolis. How could it happen? I don't think, will you double check with Rick? I don't think we should say people in Minneapolis are asking how could it happen. Do I have to have these big ass things, you guys? He said take them off. I look like I have a little pet. Hi, you guys. Here.
Thank you.
Okay, about this
side. I'm Katie Couric in Minneapolis. People across the country are asking, how could this happen? Sure. I'm Katie Couric in Minneapolis. People everywhere are asking, how could this happen? Shit. This mic is so annoying. Can you hold this? No, it's okay.
That crazy thing. It's a big alligator.
Hope there's not a giant wind gust. You know? Let me do it. Okay. I need some powder on my forehead now.
Yeah.
Hi. I wonder if there's anything we can do. I guess there isn't, to keep the wind.
Are you worried about it, Ann?
Huh? Am I good where I am, or do you want me to move?
Perfect.
Should I have hard copy of this show? Or guess we don't have it, right? Tell me, am I okay where I am? Do you guys feel like you have a good shot? Is it weird to do a move from the bridge to me? Or do you want me to... Really? Did anyone have the school bus driver? Oh. Okay. How were the headlines? Good. Josie,
yeah.
Can I just run a comb through my hair real quick?
Yeah.
It's just looking kind of whatever. It doesn't really matter, but just might as well. I just did like this because the wind was blowing, so I might as well keep it like that, right? Can
yeah.
I just...
Can you get a little flip out of this a little bit?
Mm, yeah, no. I don't think so. I think the flip is
good.
Bye-bye. Here, do you want to? Thank you. Just say some other news. Not some of the other news of the day. It's a little wordy, don't you think, Jerry? When we come back, some other news, just some other news. When we come back, some other news of the day, including a massive toy recall by Fisher-Price. How's our shot look, Rick, compared to the other guys? Thank you. Thanks, Rick. Thanks. Thank everybody back there, because I know it was a ton of work. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
I know
sorry
how much work this was, really. Thank you.
Okay,
thank you for making me look presentable. And for this
hey guys,
location.
Rick was, like, really happy.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, bye. He's saying shut up and go to the airport.
You might think it's the site of a news story, but Katie knows it's a location. Can you get my agent on the phone?
Southland, land of cotton and loam. Losers got to have a place to call home. Secession, well, it's the source of our pride, 'cause our kinfolk were on the losing side. Yeah, our kinfolk were on the losing side. Oh, the
stars and bars will never be forgot. On our state flag, the X marks the spot. It took bravery to fight for slavery. That's how we're inclined, 'cause we're just the losing kind, always left behind, 'cause we're just the losing kind. Jackson, it's Anglo-Saxon no more. Macon, you be shaken when you go to the store. Throughout our states there is this deep divide, 'cause our kinfolk were on the losing side. Yeah, our kinfolk were on the losing side. Oh, the stars and bars will never be forgot. We're Johnny Reb and not some Hottentot. It took bravery for slavery. You can't be colorblind when you're with the losing kind. This ain't what we designed, 'cause we're just the losing kind. Oh, we love our flag, it says just who we are. Fancy house, we got no fancy car. It takes bravery to forget about slavery. We don't watch, we rewind, 'cause we're just the losing kind. Surrenders what we sign, 'cause we're just the losing.
This is Lachaud checking in on the new Iraq. Living conditions in Iraq have deteriorated significantly since the invasion, leaving nearly one-third of the population in need of emergency aid. That's the report from a consortium of relief organizations. The report was issued this week. You hear about it? Of course you did. The numbers in the report offer a contrast to the picture of steadily improving conditions painted by the Iraqi government and the U.S. military over the past several months. 70%, 7-0, lack adequate water supplies compared with 50% in 2003, way back when we invaded. More than 4 million people have been displaced during that time. Yet funding for humanitarian assistance in the country has declined precipitously from $453 million in 2005, way down to $95 million. Last year. Quote, Iraq's civilians are suffering from a denial of fundamental human rights in the form of chronic poverty, malnutrition, illness, lack of access to basic services, and destruction of homes, vital facilities, and infrastructure, as well as injury and death. That's from researchers from the British-based humanitarian group Oxfam and a coalition of non-governmental organizations in a 40-page report. The organizations are working in Iraq, oddly enough. They're on the ground in Iraq. They're not like visiting congressmen. They're actually working there every day. Quote, basic indicators of humanitarian need in Iraq show that the slide into poverty and deprivation since the coalition forces entered the country has been dramatic and a deep trauma for the Iraqi people. Hey, you know, trauma is good for character. Nearly a third of the population is in need of immediate emergency aid. Government is failing to provide, this according to the report, government is failing to provide basics such as food and shelter for 8 million people. The U.S. agency overseeing reconstruction in Iraq says economic mismanagement and corruption were equivalent to a second insurgency. This is from the federal government that blames Louisiana for corruption. Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction, Stuart Bowen, says corruption is an enemy of democracy and it could not be allowed to continue at current levels. That's in an interview with the BBC. Quote, we've performed 95 audits that have found instances of programmatic weakness and waste, and we've got 57 ongoing cases right now, criminal cases looking at fraud, he says. Last year, Prime Minister Maliki's government spent only 22% of its budget on rebuilding projects, while spending 99% of the allocation for salaries, he says. He says a pathway towards potential prosperity could be found only if oil production was brought up to optimal levels and security and corruption effectively managed. The report from Oxfam suggests that 70% of the population are without adequate water supplies. Only 20% have access to effective sanitation. Ugh. Nearly 30% of children are malnourished, a sharp increase in the situation over 4 years ago. Some 15% of Iraqis regularly cannot afford to eat, taking care of the overpopulation problem. 92% of Iraq's children suffer from learning problems.
Hey, that's good progress. Learning problems are a sign of learning.
And finally, on the subject of the new Iraq, Defense Secretary Gates says U.S. officials had underestimated how difficult it would be for Iraqi leaders to make progress towards reconciliation. But he remains optimistic. Wrapping up a week-long trip to the Middle East, Gates told reporters that a highly anticipated... Gates told reporters, quote, I think the developments on the political side are somewhat discouraging at the national level. And clearly the withdrawal from the Sunnis from the government is discouraging. My hope is it can all be patched together. In some ways, and this is the quote of the week, ladies and gentlemen, from Robert Gates, defense secretary, quote, in some ways we probably all underestimated the depth of the mistrust and how difficult it would be for these guys to come together. Unquote. We all did. This is like we all were wrong about weapons of mass destruction. Who's this we, paleface? And now, a new feature of the broadcast, returning for its second appearance. So it's not that new.
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, I'm Aviva Schlorman, inviting you to take your seat at the edible table. The edible table, where every week we taste what sounds good and we hear what tastes good. Let's tuck in. First, an update on my recipe for Grandma Schlorman's potato salad cakes. We're so overwhelmed by requests for this wonderful summer treat that the edible table server at CPR.org got a severe case of digital heartburn. So if you haven't had your request answered yet, as Grandma Schlorman herself would have advised, had her server crashed. Patience, patience. One of the most controversial topics in the world of the edible table is genetically modified food. Some people think it's the greatest thing since sliced blintzes. Others call it frankenfood. Today we have a guest who's sure to lend some heat to this subject and maybe even shed some light, especially if we hold the subject close to the heat source where it should be brighter. Keith Blyjob is with the Food Improvement Foundation. Keith, pull up a seat at the edible table. Welcome.
Thanks, Aviva. Very, very cozy here.
Well, we try. The napkin rings are a nice touch, don't you think?
Well, it's certainly not my father's public radio.
It is not. Keith, a lot of people are scared of genetically modified foods. Mm-hmm. Should they be?
Well, Aviva, I think you're talking about mainly about Europeans, Asians, your Latin Americans, maybe even your Africans, who, of course, are scared of all sorts of things. But I think, thanks partly to the efforts of people like me and you, that the American people have have seen through all the scare stories to the other stories. Like the fact that GM foods...
That's genetically modified, not food made by General Motors.
That's right. Even I'd be scared of that. Like the fact that GM foods can be grown with less pesticides and herbicides.
Well, but isn't the majority of GM food today developed with a higher tolerance for pesticides and herbicides?
Oh, yes, but that's a feature, not a flaw. It's a tough old world out there on the farm, and I think our friends in the farming community have a right to have every possible tool in their toolbox because of Eva. The bugs aren't getting any nicer.
It seems like they never do.
No, amen to that. But I brought with me today some examples of exactly the other kinds of benefits this new technology is making possible for the food enthusiast.
You sound like someone who likes food yourself.
Be a pretty sad old world without it.
It would indeed. So I think I'm looking at a pasta dish at Shell's. With a summer tomato sauce?
Right on the money, Aviva. Mm. Fresh tomato sauce, I might add. Very light sauce that has to be made with tomatoes without what?
Well, usually we want them without their skins.
Mm-hmm. And skinning tomatoes is...
Well, it's one of the pleasures of my culinary life.
I know, but most folks really don't have the time for it. So what these are is skinless tomatoes.
You mean, pardon the expression... They're born that way?
No skinning required. Just pluck them out of the bag, pop them into the pan, and moments later you're enjoying fresh tomato sauce.
And I guess this disposes of the problem of disposing of the skin?
Oh, sure. Less food waste is better for the planet. We all know that.
Well, Keith, these are swell, and they taste wonderful. But why can't we just breed tomatoes like this the old-fashioned way?
Well, Aviva, first I'd like you to look at our other sample I've brought over today. Well,
gladly. Here on this dinner plate is something that looks suspiciously like a breast of chicken in a Marsala cream sauce.
Good call, Aviva, but more crucially, it's boneless breast of chicken.
Well, that is the way this dish is usually made. What's new and different?
Nobody had the boneless breast. You didn't need to pay the butcher $2 a pound for the service or spend your own precious time wrestling with a chicken breast and a boning knife.
In other words,
this is from a boneless chicken. Mm. Now, of course, the big benefit on that particular animal product is the breasts. Mm-hmm. There's not really, at the moment, a big demand for boneless drumsticks.
No stick, as it were.
But we are in serious discussions with two of the major fast food chains about what we're calling leg fingers, where you take the boneless leg product, do a fast and tasty breading preparation, and then you have a finger food it's got twice the eye appeal of the white meat.
But again... Could you breed a boneless chicken?
Oh, you could, but it wouldn't survive long enough to reproduce, nor would the skinless tomato. Mm-hmm. These are food improvements that are only possible with a technology that doesn't depend on the long-term viability of the variety being created.
So there's cloning of adults involved in this process?
That's a good layman's understanding of the procedure. All I know is chicken that doesn't have to be manhandled to become boneless, doggone it. It just seems to taste better. Maybe that's just my prejudice.
Well, it does have a wonderful chicken flavor, and usually bones add flavor. But...
Well, if that's what the market tells us, of course, we can also provide a chicken product with twice the bones of the existing stock there, too. You don't want that critter wandering around the barnyard.
No. Keith, are these products in the food stream right now, or is this the future we're looking at?
A little bit of both, Aviva. From what I'm privy to, I'd be looking for a rollout of leg fingers before this Christmas.
Maybe we'll find them under the tree. Keith Blyjob, thank you for joining us now. It's time to get up from the edible table. We had help this week from the Doris and Edgar Elgar Foundation. We're the food people. Next week, we'll get another helping of whatever's fresh and frozen. And you're welcome to join us at the edible table. I'm Aviva Schlorman saying, eat something. You look terrible. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
New York is my lady. Ooh, too long we've been apart. Her tunnels of love are calling. Her bridges are burning my heart. I'm gonna go back to my lady. always calling wherever I roam. You know that New York is my lady, and my lady's my home sweet home. Yeah, New York is my lady. Oh, she charms me day and night. Her Bronx shows such pleasing cleavage. Her Brooklyn is clean out of sight. Her Queens is too classy for royalty. Staten Island, a trip across that foam. You know that New York is my lady, and my lady's my home sweet home. Now wait a minute, I've been unfaithful to her. Yeah, I've spent time with other dames, but just hearing her name set my heart aflame. I've got a yen just to see her again. I've got an itch for that fabulous witch. Oh, New York is my lady, and my lady, she is no tram. Her Central Park is a ball after dark. Her streets are no place to camp. You've got to acknowledge my lady. She's a beauty without brush or comb. You know that New York is my lady, and my lady's my home sweet. I got to repeat, my lady's my home sweet.
Ladies and gentlemen, a leading environmentalist is quoted in Rupert Murdoch's Times of London as saying that walking does more than driving to cause global warming, because food production is now so energy intensive that more carbon is emitted, providing a person with enough calories to walk to the store, than a car would cover over the same distance. So just stay in bed. Forget about it. That concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America by the shortwave giant WBCQ The Planet, on Mighty 104 in Berlin, on Sirius and XM satellite radios, available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow. Available whenever you want it at two different locations, live and archived on the internet, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'll be just like Rupert Murdoch not screwing around with the Wall Street Journal if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Email to this broadcast, go to harryshearer.com. Playlist for this broadcast, go to harryshearer.com. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.